welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
This morning with Professor Jennifer Curtin. Morena, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Morena.
It's a bit of a weird time at the moment. How are you feeling?
Oh, it's a little bit crazy, you know, trying to get with, you know, we've only just back teaching again and suddenly we're, you know, putting all our stuff back online and reorganising how to deliver our classes and connect with our students online. I think it's very weird for everyone.
It is. It is something that we've been, I guess, prepared for, that this was always a possibility we might go back into. I did want to start by talking about that a little bit, because yesterday we saw Jerry Brownlee was sort of walking up to the line, maybe some people are saying, of talking about perhaps Ashley Bloomfield was withholding information about community spread and things like this. He didn't, you know, out and out say that, but he has kind of, he sort of left it there, left it hanging. What are your thoughts around this? Is this irresponsible from Jerry Brownlee? What do you think?
I think it's really unhelpful in the sense that, but I have to say, I'm wondering if this is the approach by the opposition leader and deputy leader, in the sense that they are deciding to go negative at different times. So they'll deliver some policy announcements and then they'll go negative and spread a bit of fear, and playing to the group of voters that may be leaving National and going to fringe right parties. So there's sort of, I think, a campaign edge to this, but also just more generally, it's really risky, because this is the time when we want information that is not misinformation or disinformation, or, you know, and people are really already anxious and want to just know the facts. They want evidence, and you know, if we get a timeline from our officials that tell us this is when they knew and this is what they did, unless there's evidence to the contrary, it's the journalist's role to ask the hard questions of those officials to verify that account. But sort of just floating some kind of balloon about, you know, just some reckons about what he thinks might have gone on, it's really it looks kind of Trumpian, actually.
And we've also seen some criticism as well of Judith Collins in the last day. Thomas Coughlin has reported that Collins was dangerously undermining the Constitution, perhaps, by suggesting that there's a caretaker convention to consult the opposition before the election, when in reality the government is elected to lead up until the election in New Zealand. What are your thoughts around this?
Yeah, this is... It's difficulty with not having, I suppose, a codified written constitution. So we do have a pre-election period where once the campaign is, I mean, the election date is announced and we know when Parliament's going to rise, that governments won't make any new commitments to, say, high-level staff, and they won't do a lot of advertising of government policy, or they won't do advertising of government policy. But this isn't, there isn't really strong conventions around, you know, she's wrong in saying that in the pre-election period is a constitutional convention. You know, Ardern told Collins what was happening before she went public with it, but there's no obligation for the government of the day to consult and engage with the opposition parties on what they should do right now in terms of managing this new lockdown period, for example. So she has got it wrong. I mean, I think the broader point about should we delay the election is one that the government or the Prime Minister has to really think about, because opposition parties are unable to campaign right now, especially in some of the critical seats in Auckland, but also more generally for the party list. And people understand that while the Prime Minister isn't using the 1 o'clock press conferences to campaign, the fact is she's there and present in a way that the opposition parties, not just National, but the others as well, that need airtime. And they're not getting it right now, and that sort of does undermine the idea of a free and fair election where all parties get to have their policies put out in the public domain and discussed.
So do you think we should be looking at delaying the election a little bit, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think probably it's going to have to. Like, I was looking at, you know, for example, postal votes. Like, my mum's overseas. You have to apply to postal vote by the 26th of August, and we have to know who all the candidates are before the voting papers are printed. And all of those things need to happen in the next couple of weeks. And if we don't, you know, we just need some surety. So it doesn't sound like we have that yet. And so maybe it's important to consider at least postponing it a couple of extra weeks. And there is room for manoeuvre and for delay, a little bit of delay in the Electoral Act and in terms of the sort of constitutional conventions. It just can't be done like Collins wants. Mm. It can't be delayed into next year mm-hmm. without a change to the Constitution Act.
I do want to come back to talking specifically about candidates, particularly Auckland Central, but I did just want to touch on what's going on with the suspension of the dissolution of Parliament. Can you just explain what the dissolution of Parliament actually is and does and why it's been suspended at the moment?
Goodness. Okay. Sorry, I'm not a parliamentary process expert, but the dissolution of Parliament is kind of like the formal last sitting day, and
right.
Legislation can no longer be passed, the House will no longer sit. And then the writs are, there's the formal distribution of the writs, which means that the election will definitely be held on this particular date.
Right.
Now, why the dissolution is being postponed is that there may be reasons for Parliament to continue meeting. So if, for example, it doesn't dissolve on Monday, and the Prime Minister says, no, we'll just postpone it, then Parliament will sit again next Tuesday and debates will be held and question time will be held and so on. So really, the dissolution of Parliament is the end of the term of this three-year Parliament, and then we go to an election.
So let's move now to Auckland Central, because this one's been quite a big topic recently. Obviously, we've only just got a national candidate in that seat since Nikki Kaye stood down. What are your thoughts around this? Because as you just mentioned, it's going to be hard for this candidate and all the other candidates as well at the moment to run a campaign while we are in level three. What do you think is going on there? What's this going to mean for the various parties contesting that seat?
Well, I think the new candidate is Emma Mallow, and she's a communications expert. And she's been working at the ANZ, and before that she worked in Sydney, and she has some political sort of experience, I suppose, working for the Liberal Party in New South Wales. She's got big shoes to fill with Nikki Kaye's resignation. And she should be able to overcome the sort of... There was a lot of mess that went on prior to her selection. There's still some noise around it that will be unfortunate for her campaign in terms of...
Is this the allegations?
..an alleged member of the board. Yeah, talking to a talkback host under a pseudonym called Merv, who was trying to undermine one of the other candidates, right? So there's been a lot of mess. But, you know, she came out campaigning, you know, she got good reports in the news yesterday and the day before, standing up for the national standard line around, you know, that Labor and the Greens are going to be bad for, you know, raise taxes and so on. But I think more generally, Helen, she's coming from behind in the sense that actually Helen White and Chloe Swarbrick, because they've been going head-to-head and because Labor isn't going to do a deal for the Greens to win that seat, they've had the opportunity to get their profile out there and to bait each other about celebrity politics and all sorts of things. And there's also been a number of Auckland Central debates already that different organisations have held that Helen White and Chloe Swarbrick have been able to be at, and Jenny Markoff, whereas Emma Mallow hasn't had that opportunity. So it's going to be difficult, and there's only 1,500 votes that separated Labor and National last time round, and people are still divided on whether they think a Green Party candidate that has a high profile will split the vote and allow National to win, or whether or not the Greens might take it, like an inner seat of Melbourne that often goes Green, for example.
I just wanted to quickly, before we let you go, touch base on what's going on overseas, because obviously we're not the only country in the world that's in the throes of a pandemic and an election. America is very notably in an election year as well. And Biden's just announced his new running mate, running candidate as Kamala Harris. Can you tell us a little bit about who Kamala Harris is and what also that means about her being in that role?
This is so exciting, I have to say. Like, we, many of us who were American politics watchers and care about women in politics were really crossing our fingers that he would select an African-American woman for this role, because, you know, he's almost 78, if he's not 78 already, so he's only going to do one term. And the convention in American politics is often that whoever is the VP, should Biden win, is the person then that gets the first chance to sort of run for the presidential nomination for that party next time round. So this is potentially setting Kamala Harris up and America to have their first black woman president, right, which is, you know, just amazing. But she's a senator from California. She's been a attorney general. Her mother is from India and her father is from Jamaica. They met in the civil rights movement as activists, and so she comes from a very political background. She's a bit more moderate, say, than Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. They see her as not too left, the party does, and that she'll be but she's strong on law and order. So in the wake of George Floyd's death, really kind of an opportunity, I think they're saying, to not just mobilise black voters in America, but to really talk to black women voters, who are often the ones doing a lot of, like, mobilising the campaign to get out the vote in America. So while the VP candidate itself doesn't really matter, it's going to be the broader flow-on effect of really energising African-American voters to get out to vote and to mobilise their communities to do the same.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show this morning, Jennifer. I hope you're keeping well in these weird times, and we'll talk to you again in
Likewise.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah, thanks, Rachel. Have a good day.
You too. See you later.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
this morning.